righteousness, O congregation? Do you judge uprightly, O you sons of men? If you remember from this morning, this is the Lord asking, do you really know what's right? And if you do, how come you always make the wrong judgments? You know, how can you speak righteousness and judge so wrong? How can you pick the wrong job, the wrong husband, the wrong clothes, the wrong everything? How can you make such a mess out of your life, which life is a series of judgments? And if you keep making the wrong judgments, then it's obvious you don't know what you're talking about. Now, how in the world, the Lord is saying here, can you be a survivor of your life up to this point and still think you know anything right? As a matter of fact, if you know what's right and you're so happy, what are you doing here tonight? See, this is a spiritual hospital. This is where we go to be healed by the truth. Now, if truth is what you need to heal you, then lying is what made you sick. So see, someone's been lying to you all your life, and that's why things go wrong. Now you go to church and you want someone to continue to lie to you about why you're wrong. And that just doesn't make any sense. The Lord is saying, how could you speak righteousness, judge uprightly, and be in the mess that you're in? And this isn't for the first time, by the way. Why do you practice being so unhappy? Don't you learn from your experiences? Sure. You learn how to do it worse the next time. He says, yea, in heart ye work wickedness. Ye weigh the violence of your hands in the earth. Remember what this meant. The word heart meant in emotion, in love, in devotion, in temperament, in mood. Says in, it's all in your emotions that you work wickedness. You look at someone and you know that individual is wrong as they can be, but you have that emotion called love that causes you to see beyond what's obvious until after you say, I do, and then you wish you hadn't. And then we have to go to another man who tries to get you to say, I want to undo what I do. See, we pay one man to make us do and another one to undo. We call them preachers and lawyers. Here we go again. The Lord is saying, you work wickedness in your heart. It's this emotionality that you have, this way that you saw to handle situations as you were growing up as a child. Mom controlled dad with anger and or tears. With threats of I love you or I won't love you. See, they're both threats, aren't they? I love you is just as much a threat as if I don't love you. Because you see, once she threatens you with love, you are forever bound to that individual. You get hooked and addicted to her love. And just like a pusher, you need her to make you feel good, guys. But just like a pusher, you get to hate the thing that you need to make you feel bad, that makes you feel good before you have the hangover. And then she is the pusher in this marriage, ultimately only needs you for one thing, the material things that she can get out of you. That's all a pusher cares about. Doesn't care about you. How much money will you pay for this happiness that I'm selling you in a little bag? And you end up being just a dollar sign to that individual, as easily replaceable by another as can be. It just doesn't matter. You got the money, he loves you. You don't have the money, forget it. So you see, you have a pusher-addict relationship that didn't start there, that's where it culminated. The relationship started when you became addicted to love. When you realize that people that loved you meant you could do whatever you want and get away with it. Then you went to school and you understood the principal and the teacher didn't love you. At least not the way you thought you ought to have been. Why, these people had the filthy nerve to expect you to be to school on time. And turn in papers too? What is wrong with these people? Don't they love me? No, they don't. You see, you're addicted. You were addicted as a child, and now you're addicted as an adult. And here's the irony of it. Now you're hooking your children on the same addiction that you have. It is no accident that a mother carrying a child addicts that child to whatever she takes in. You think that stops just because the child is born? That child is still eating what mom eats. Because mom does the cooking. But dad brings it in. So you see, in the final analysis, the father originates, the mother nurtures, and the child gets hooked. That's how you got hooked, and that's how you're hooking. And that's why they call them hookers, by the way. I just thought of that. Thank you, Lord. I hadn't thought of that before. You see, he says in emotions, see, the hooker, however you're applying this word, depends drastically on several things. Number one, you have a need you can't legitimately fill, or you don't want to. And you don't care who it is, and there's no emotional attachment. You just want money. That's an addiction. Some people snort. Some people huff and puff. Some people eat like a, you know what? And some people have to buy love and emotion. Now, why do you suppose a woman would look at that kind of way of living as being attractive? Because as a child, all she had to do was smile, be cute, say something cute, and she could get away with whatever she wanted with mom and dad, especially dad. Oh, this is my little baby. Look how cute she is. Well, then you grow up and you long for that kind of love from men. Now you marry one man, and this guy is, he's cuckoo. He expects you to do dishes. Well, all you had to do was look, just lay around and look cute for dad. And this excuse for a human being wants you to do dishes and get up in the morning and make breakfast? What is the matter with this guy? Doesn't he realize I'm just cute? See, mom trained you just to put some curls in your hair. The curls are fine, sweetheart, but I'd like some toast. But see, you get indoctrinated in that the thing that you're there to do, you don't want to do. And then some would say, well, yeah, women are just supposed to do this and this. Well, how about men? See, then you start that and you find a man who wants you to cute him. So then what does he do? He comes home after a hard day's work, takes off his shirt, exposes a beer belly and some ugly hair on his chest, pops the top on a beer can, sits in front of the TV set and says, don't I look great? What happened to all this emotion and all this love? It's working wickedness now, isn't it? It's the natural end result of how you started. Look at how your mom and dad got along. They could care less. Everybody's out for their own needs. And if you don't do what's good for me, then I don't like you, and vice versa. So he says, you work in your heart, you work wickedness. You weigh the violence of your hands in the earth. The wicked are estranged from the womb. They go astray as soon as they be born, speaking lies. Now, astray, remember, meant to vacillate. You just can't make a decision. You want to go to this church, you want to go to that church, you want this job, you want this job, you want this guy, you want that. Just can't make up your mind. See, going astray doesn't mean you go off and rob a bank somewhere, although that's part of it. What it really means is indecision. And not only indecision in choosing something, but even after you've made the choice, the indecision stays with you, because after you get what you don't want it. So you see, you're forever on this treadmill looking for happiness, and whatever you decide you want, you work diligently to get it, and then when you finally attain it, you realize, I don't want this anymore. So then there's another hill, another horizon, another boyfriend, another girlfriend, another husband, another job, another high, another drug, a different kind of thing. It's always something else. And it never satisfies. Never. Why? Because you've gone astray. You vacillate. You can't make a decision and then be satisfied and enjoy the fruits of your decision. It says you go astray as soon as you're born. And the reason you go astray is because you speak lies. Now remember, lies meant not only what it obviously means, but the root word of lies is to fail. We learned this morning that if you lie, you fail. If you tell truth, you succeed. So obviously, if you hear lies, you're going to fail. Remember the people that told you they would love you forever and forever lasted till the next morning? They were lying, weren't they? And because they were lying, the relationship failed, didn't it? So you see, lying and failure go hand in hand. Now, when someone walks up to you and says, you are the most beautiful, charming woman that I've ever met on the face of this earth, and I will be dedicated to you forever, doesn't even know your first name yet, it's pretty safe to assume the dude is lying. Now, no one would be a better judge of the fact that the guy's lying like a cheap rug than you, because you know you. You know you're not charming. You're a jerk. And you're lying to him, too, because when you put on all that stuff to go over there to get those compliments, a bar of soap, a pan of water in 5 minutes, and I'll show him the real you. Ain't no sense lying to him, because he's going to see it. Once you say, I do, he's going to say, what have I done? And it doesn't just stop there. You know, after that, on the wedding night, Fredericks of Hollywood goes flying all over. And he realizes, what in the world has happened here? Everybody's lying to everybody else. And I'm not saying that you have to be some playboy, miniaturized doll of some kind. I'm saying be honest. Because, see, he's going to find out sooner or later. And she's going to find out sooner or later. And you're better off to know what you're dealing with before you deal with it. You can't fake it forever. See, you go around speaking lies. And then you wonder why your relationships and your life is falling apart. Why? Because it's built on lies. Lies that you've spoken and lies that you've heard. Well, why do you like lies? Why are you addicted to lies? Because your parents lied to you from day one. It's not your fault. You can't help it. I understand. I love you anyway. Lies, lies, lies. And as a result, you're a walking testimony of how to fail. Your only chance is to go to a place where a man such as I is going to tell you the truth. Because obviously lying to you has never helped you. As a matter of fact, it ensures your failure. You see, you got started wrong. Now it says in verse 4, you're speaking lies. Your poison is like the poison of a serpent. They are like the deaf adder that stoppeth her ear. Now remember, poison meant toxins. Remember when we made the analogy this morning, when you're full of poison or intoxicated, you can't hear. Go in any bar and everybody's screaming at each other. And everybody's talking so loud and the music is so loud and everything is so loud. Why? The poison, the toxin, the alcohol, the drugs, all that is stopping the ear. They can't hear. It is no accident. When people get upset at each other, they're poisoned with anger. They start screaming at each other. Why? They're this close. You would think the closer they get together, the more quiet they would, and they scream even more. Well, why? They're full of poison. They're like a serpent, and it stoppeth the ear. They cannot hear. And it isn't that they can't only hear the decibel level. They can't comprehend what you're saying. You will tell them one thing, and they'll turn it around and say, you don't love me. I didn't say I didn't love you. I said you burned my toast. But see, they can't hear. Their poison has stopped the ear. Oh, this means you have somebody else and you're going to leave me. No, I just want some toast, please. That's all. Just T-O-A-S-T, toast. Oh, you have another one. No, no, you can't. You can't. You can't get across them. Serpents. And they have fangs with poison in them. And the minute they succeed in making you angry, they inject their poison, then you get angry, and then you got two snakes going at each other. What, they both become emotional, haven't they? And like poison, they have a deaf ear. They're like an adder. Verse 5 says, which will not hearken to the voice of charmers, charming never so wisely. In other words, you got started by people telling you things, and they were charming, your mother, your father, and everybody charmed you. But after a while, you get sick and tired of charming people. So as a result, after you've got surrounded by charmers, then you don't like them anymore. That's why your marriages, your relationship go down the tubes, because they started out with a charmer, someone who lied to you. And no matter how much they charm you, after a while, you just can't hack it anymore. Why? Because the whole thing was based and predicated on lies. The thing that amazes me, the first time you come to a church such as this and you hear the truth, that makes you angry too. Now, after a whole year or a whole lifetime of lies, you would think you'd had it up to here with lies. Try it. You'll like it. Truth will do you good. Charmers certainly have not. Verse 6 says, "Break their teeth, O God, in their mouth. Break out the great teeth of the young lions, O Lord. Let them melt away as waters which run continually when he bendeth his bow to shoot his arrows. Let them be as cut in pieces." Verse 8, "As the snail which melteth, let every one of them pass away, like the untimely birth of a woman, that they may not see the sun." In other words, those that speak righteously think you know it all. You think your judgments are always correct. You're wicked. You're estranged from the womb. You speak lies. You have a serpent's tongue. You're spreading poison. You're full of poison. You can't hear. You're looking for charmers. He said, you may not see the sun. Now, it is important to understand what the sun means, because obviously we all saw it today. It's not talking literally. The Hebrew word for sun that translates into English to sun means to be brilliant. Let them not see the one who is brilliant. Let them not be, and I've had many times people say, "I can't see that. I don't see it your way." I'm not surprised. Psalm 58:8 says, "You may not see the sun." You can't see the brilliance. Now, the brilliance isn't mine. I just happen to reflect it. I'm like the moon. See, I just reflect the light. That's all I'm doing. Here's the light, and I'm reflecting it. That's all. It's coming right out of yours truly. So, sun means let them not see the brilliance. Now, why do you need brilliance? Well, if I had a light switch here and it wasn't on the other wall, I'd show you why. Because the minute I turn off the wall, you're all in the dark. Can't see your way. You don't lack intelligence, you lack light. And living in the dark is not a good way to live. But he says, here's what you may not see if you think you already know all the answers. You see, if you're coming to, would you go to the hospital sick, knowing you're sick, not knowing what's wrong with you, and then sit there and try to tell all the doctors and all the nurses what to do and how to do it? Not if you have any brains at all. But you come here and you do the same thing. Now, some people think, they say, well, God's everywhere and I can go to any church. Well, let me tell you something. Again, this is a spiritual hospital. The church, not just this church, but the church of the Lord Jesus Christ is a spiritual hospital. Now, when you walk into the hospital and you happen to have a problem with gynecology, they're not going to send you to pediatrics. You don't get to choose where you're going to say, well, I like it over there because it has a southern exposure and I can watch the mountains from there. They say, no, this is the department. This is the place where we take care of people with your problem. But you don't treat the church of Jesus Christ the same way. You're here because this is the ward you belong to. This is the cuckoo ward in this place. See, this is where the cuckoos come. Because you have to be taught. You think wrong. Now, don't try to go to pediatrics. You're not a little child anymore. You don't need a rattle. That's your problem now. You got rattles and fangs. The point is, you cannot tell Jesus Christ where you're going to be healed and what you need. If you're here, it's because you need to hear what's being preached here. And if you're somewhere else, it's because you need to hear what's being preached there. Now, if what you're hearing isn't helping you, then you're in the wrong place. I mean, if you have a broken bone, what are you doing in the cafeteria? What are you going to do? Set it with hot dog buns or what? Why don't you let the doctor be the doctor? Why don't you understand all you have to do to contribute? The only contribution you can make is the problem. That's all you can do. You can bring the illness here. Don't diagnose and don't treat. You're a quack, in other words. You're trying to treat yourself. And all you're doing is you're contagious. All you can do is spread it. So now we're back to the brilliance. Brilliant means to glitter, to sparkle, to be vivid and intense, to be very splendid and distinguished, having keen intelligence, great talent or skill. Now these are gifts of God. And you need to see those gifts, and you need to see them in action. First of all, you need to see that they're available and they work, and then I have to teach you they're yours too. So you see, in order to be brilliant, he says, you're not going to see this. Sparkle means to be brilliant and lively. See, if you don't have those other characteristics, once you learn, you don't know anything, and you let God turn the light on, for immediately you become lively. You become brilliant. It doesn't mean that right away you know everything. It means you have light now to read with. Now you're capable to start learning. See, when I say I'm brilliant, that doesn't mean I know diddly. It means I have enough light, so whatever I need to know, I can read it and find out. Whatever you need to know, you can hear it from me or through your whatever Christian talked to you, and you can hear it. But you need light. Because God's only going to give you what you need that particular day. You want the whole kit and caboodle for the rest of your life. It's not going to work that way. Brilliant also means to glitter. I like this part. It means to be strikingly brilliant and attractive. Hey, before you get too carried away, do you know what attracts a frog? Another frog. So you see, what's happening here, the only people that find me attractive are people that like the truth and don't like charming and don't want to be flattered. You want to be told how it is, when it is, and what to do about it, or you're not going to find me attractive. You see, it isn't a facial thing. It isn't a physical thing. Although the senses will find... See, beauty is only skin deep, my friend. I won't go in too deep into that one. But the point that I'm making, it takes this kind to attract the same kind. Now, when someone says, well, I don't like him and I don't think he's very... Thank God. Because I happen to know what you're dealing with. I would be upset. I would be worried if you found me attractive as you first walked in here. Because that would mean I'd be in the same shape you're in. No, thank you. I've been there. I gave it the office beside that. Brilliant also means to be vivid. Here's what you cannot see. Vivid means to be full of life and vigorous and intense. But vivid also means bringing realistic images to the mind. As we speak about these things, you will see yourself as a child being treated that way, reacting that way, and you know God is talking about you. And you can see it in your mind. And worse than that, then you can see flashes in your mind of what you're doing to your children exactly the way it was done to you. And then to your horror, you will realize, my God, I know what I've done with my life. Are my children going to do the same? Yes, because they're living under the same lies you are. So you see, the vivid individual, you need someone who brings these realistic images to your mind. You don't need to go to a place where they tell you about abortions, homosexuality, and how many people are starving in Ethiopia, unless you live in Ethiopia. You need to know what's wrong with you. You're starving to death. You're starving for truth. And you need someone that's going to bring realistic images to your mind so that you can understand you don't know what you're doing. Brilliant also means to be very splendid. And splendid means magnificent, gorgeous, grand, illustrious, and worthy of high praise. Now, don't misunderstand. I'm not talking about an individual. We're talking about the truth here. The light, Jesus Christ, that thing that you need to make you realize what it is that you're doing. So you see, as long as the truth is not worthy of high praise, as long as you worry and say, oh, somebody's going to know what I've done. You want to hide what you've done. You want to deny what you've done. You want to deny that you're the source of your own problem. Well, then the truth is not worthy of high praise in your life. And therefore, you have a series of failures. Why? Because if you don't have the truth, then you have the lie. Because that's all there is. Now, I know the truth doesn't necessarily make you feel good to begin with, like all good medicine. It doesn't taste good going down, but it has a good effect. And until you count the sun, brilliance, the light, Jesus Christ, worthy of high praise, you're not going to get it. Also, the sun, Jesus Christ, is very distinguished. Eminent. Distinguished means eminent and having an air of distinction. There's that certain quality about that individual. They walk into a room and there's something different about them. They have a distinction about them. It isn't just physical appearance, although that's what your senses are aware of, but something else about that individual attracts you to them. There's a quality, there's an air of distinction. You know what distinction is? Because we can all have it. Distinction means the condition of being different. You don't run with the pack. You don't cry when everybody else cries and laugh when everybody else laughs. You live in a different world. You're different. There's a distinction about you. And you see, that's what truth brings to you. You finally realize Jesus Christ is our Lord and Savior. There's no way for us to fail. So there's a certain air of distinction. People can't make you cry. They can't get you excited. They can't get you down. There's something different about you. And you don't care what they think. You'll tell them the truth. And they're used to charmers. So there's a distinction. Sun also means to be full of vigorous life. See, when you have this quality, this is what Jesus is offering you, vigorous life. And this is what he's saying. You may not see. You're not going to see this until you get these characteristics, this know-it-all attitude out of your mind. You're not going to have vigorous life. And life is that property which makes it possible to take in food, get energy from it, grow, and adapt to your surroundings. In other words, an individual that cannot go home and sit down at a meal, eat his food, turn it into energy, grow, and then be able to work and adapt to his surroundings is going to die. Now, if you come to church, or if you come to a relationship and you can't take it in, you can't take what's being done, you can't get anything positive as energy from it, and you can't adapt to it, it's going to die. So you see, if you are not used to the truth, then all your relationships are going to die because the only thing you can get energy from is lies. You have to be told how wonderful you are when you're not. Life also means a human being. You know, it's too bad that most people may not see the sun. I'm going to tell you what the problem is. God says you can't see it. Now, it has nothing to do with your visual perception of light. The word see comes from the Hebrew, and this means you can't see the things I've just described. It means to contemplate with pleasure. You can't look at this and say, thank God that he's pointing out to me what's wrong with me so I can know what to ask him to correct. Thank God. I can look at the truth. I can hear the truth with pleasure instead of being angry and depressed and upset, critical and judgmental. He says, the problem is you can't see brilliance with pleasure. You can't contemplate it with pleasure. See also means to perceive mentally. You sit there and say, what's he talking about? This is simple. It has to be simple. How would I get it if it wasn't? See also means a compact. Now we're talking. All you Avon veterans, you know what a compact is. No, that's not all it is. A compact is an agreement or a covenant as looked upon with approval. Now that means your Bible, the truth, the Lord Jesus Christ. So he says, first of all, you're not going to be able to contemplate the truth with pleasure. And think about it, when people tell you the truth, you get upset. And you can't get it mentally. You just can't see, well, why are they saying it? Because it's true. And you can't look at it as an agreement that you can look upon with approval. In other words, the best thing that can happen to you is that you know the truth. Because Jesus says the truth will make you free. Now, let me tell you how I can always see people that I would rather opt out for an eclipse of the sun. And you can forget it because it doesn't happen here. I'm going to tell you what you're wishing for that you're not going to get. To contemplate with pleasure, you can tell the individual that's willing to do that and not willing to do that. He says, you don't contemplate this message, this truth, with pleasure. The word contemplate means to gaze intently. It means to look at intently, to think about intently, and to study carefully. In other words, he says, you come to church, and the minute you start hearing the truth, your mind is dancing all over on every conceivable, perceivable distraction for the simple reason you simply cannot contemplate this with pleasure. In other words, you don't like it. You just can't look at it, think about it, and study it carefully. Why? Because it's going to change you if you do. So you'd rather have a little Band-Aid, a shot of Vaseline or whatever, and you're off again. That doesn't happen here. Major surgery is what you need. Now, what does contemplate mean besides look at it, think about it, and study it? It means to consider. So you're not coming here to be told what to do. You're here to be told what you're doing. Now, if you're happy with what you're doing and the results, what do I care? I'm only interested in those people that are ignorantly doing that that's hurting them. And once we remove the ignorance, if you still choose to do it, go right ahead. Not hurting me any. And if God's going to wait on you, then certainly so am I. Why should I care? So now he says, well, you contemplate in order to think about, study it, and consider it. That's all God is asking you to do. Consider the truth. And then the last part of contemplation means to have it in mind as a possibility. Could it be that all these years and 15 marriages later, I was wrong? And some would say, well, I've only been married once. You don't know what marriage means, my friend. You've been married umpteen times. You know what marriage means? It means to bring a man and a woman together in a sexual union. That's what marriage means. Don't give me that routine, you've been married once. I didn't just come in on the boat. And neither did you. Now think about all the times that you've been married. That's why when some people tell me, they say, well, you've been married before, you can't preach. I say, well, so have you. You can't hear it then. Get out. Hey, if I have to be a virgin to preach it, then you have to be a virgin to hear it. God is no respecter of persons. I don't even know how I got on that. See, the point that's being made here is that Jesus says, I just want you to take this in mind as a possibility. Not trying to force you, not threatening you, I'm going to smash you if you don't get it. He says, just think about it. Maybe it's possible you've been wrong. Just maybe it's possible that if you'll give this half a chance, you will see the wisdom, the plausibility, and the attractiveness of trying something other than what you've been doing all your life that you know doesn't work. Now, see, I can't stand here and tell you, I know that you know this is going to work. Now, I know it's going to, but you don't. But I'll tell you what we do agree on. We both know that you know what you know doesn't work. Now, we both are in agreement with that. So from there, we ought to go and try something else. So he says, you don't contemplate this as a possibility. And you don't do it with pleasure either. Pleasure means a pleased feeling of enjoyment. In other words, the truth makes you upset. And he says, here's the other problem, that you're not going to see the sun. It's a compact to look upon with approval. And compact is a very important word. This is what messages are all about. This is what preaching is all about. This is what Christianity is all about. This is what marriage is all about. It's a compact. It's an agreement that you should look upon with approval. Unfortunately, once you say I do, then you don't want to anymore. Then you don't look upon it with approval anymore. That's why you come into a church, you look around and say, oh, this is nice, a lot of nice people, everybody shake your hand. Then we get down to the truth and you want a divorce. Just the way you handle your marriages. That's why when you wake up in the morning, your child loves you. The first time you tell them no, they want a divorce. Or at least a legal separation. So you don't look at the truth as a compact. A compact agreement between two or more individuals. It's a covenant. In other words, the Bible. A covenant is the promise. Now understand what you're turning your back on when you turn your back on the truth. You're turning your back on the covenant. And covenant means the promises made by God to man as recorded in the Bible. That's the covenant. Now, you are the covenantee. The covenantee is the person to whom the promises set down in the covenant are made. So you need to understand this will is for you. This is what God left you for your life, and it's called truth. And all the charmers are giving you lies. So the covenant is the Bible. The covenantee is the individual the promises are made to. And the covenantor is the person that made the promises. So see, I don't fit in here anywhere. I'm just the messenger boy. That's all I am. Don't try to make me more than that. But how dare you try to make me less? So see, the problem is here, you don't understand that the truth is a covenant. It's a binding agreement between you and God. It's God's promise to you that I'm going to do what I said I'm going to do. And it's also God's promise to you is you're going to do what I told you you're going to do if you don't do what I told you to do. But you get to make the choice. See, it's a covenant. It is not an unconditional surrender that you signed. It's an agreement where you have to agree and you have to approve. Now, let me close with this. I'm going to give you a little example of how the same message turns some people off and throws them out the door. Other people get livid and upset. Other people sit around and say, oh, gosh, man, I wonder what time he's going to quit. They get cold on me. Other people get upset, and other people are out to lunch, even though it's 10 to 8. They're still out to lunch. How does the sun affect us? And I'm going to give you a lesson in how the sun works physically, the S-U-N, because that's the way the S-O-N, the truth, affects us, the same way. Now, we have one sun in the solar system. We have one sun spiritually, the Lord Jesus Christ. They're both central. And both give us light, and we can't live without either sun. One means you can't live physically, and the other one means you can't live spiritually or emotionally. But it's the same sun that I'm going to share you how it affects different parts of the world differently. Now, it's only one sun. Remember that. Now, in those areas where there's high altitude or rarefied air, it's cold, but yet it's the same sun. In those parts of the world where the altitude is very, very low. It's hot, but it's the same sun. Now, out in space, it's cold. So there is no heat coming from the sun. It's light that comes from the sun. Now, how that light affects the earth depends on if you're high or low, or if you're in the middle. If you're in the middle, it's such a comfort, it's what's called the comfort zone. But if you're high, you're cold. Up in mountains, high altitudes, cold, uncomfortable, hard. However, if you're very, very low in the low desert areas, it's miserably hot. There's only one place that there's comfort, and that's in the middle. Now, whenever you get high emotionally, you're uncomfortable. Whenever you get depressed, when you get high emotionally, you get so cool, you get cold, don't you? Nobody can tell you anything. But then if you get very low and someone tells you the truth, you're very depressed, very angry. But if you're high and someone tells you the truth, you just, what do you know? I'm skating, everything's fine. Well, I'm going to share with you how that works. High altitude creates cold, not because the sun has changed. He's always the same. It's where you're at that's the problem. See, you're in rare air. That's your problem. You're too high. And rare means loose, thin, scarce. In other words, there's not enough air up there. It's very thin, tenuous. Tenuous means air at high altitude, which is not dense and not substantial. In other words, you're lightheaded. I mean, you're spaced out. You got a lot of empty space up there. You know, there's not a whole lot going on up there. You're out to lunch, in other words. You think you already know everything. Empty space is galore, and you say, I already know everything. No, the only thing you know is that you don't know. But here's what you don't know that I know. I know that you don't know. And you don't know that I know that you don't know. Or you think that you know that I don't know that you know, but I know. Now, you've got rare air. That's your problem. You know what air is? Atmosphere. Atmosphere means the air in a given space, but it also means a surrounding influence or a spirit. That's what atmosphere means. Now, the surrounding influence, the surrounding spirit about you is high, rare, scarce, loose, thin. So the truth, when it hits you, leaves you cold. See, there's just nothing substantial about you. You have that spirit about you that you think you know everything. The fact of the matter is you know very little except how to do wrong. So see, this rare influence, this rarefied, very loose, very thin influence or spirit that you have causes the truth to leave you cold. Just leaves you cold. It doesn't do anything for you. And what's the problem? You're high. See, it's high air. It's a high spirit. Well, what does high mean? It means lofty. It means above other persons in rank, position, or strength. You think you're superior. Why? Because your mom told you you were superior, and so did your dad. They treated you and coddled you and made exceptions for you. They never told you the truth. They didn't make the rules stick. They made exceptions for you. So you've grown up thinking you're above other persons in rank, position, strength. It also means high means to be above other persons in quality or character. See, the individual that intrinsically thinks they're superior is destined, when they hear the truth, it's going to leave you cold. You've been programmed not to accept the truth. High also means superior, exalted, haughty, and overbearing. But it also means excited and excitable, elated, drunk, intoxicated, high, euphoria induced by drugs. But you know what else high means? It means to be far from the equator. Now, the equator is what's in the middle. High, equator, low. North Pole, equator, South Pole. Now, talking about in that context, I'm topography, I'm flipping it the other way and saying high in the middle and low. The equator is in the middle. Now, what's wrong with the high person? They're far from the equator. They're too high. They're far from the equator. You know what equator means? It doesn't mean just that circle around the middle of the globe that the teacher always made you memorize where it was. Equator means one who makes things equal. One who says, I'm no respecter of persons, I love you all. One who says, I'm not going to choose you over you. You'll succeed just like you. As far as I'm concerned, you'll all be healthy, you'll all be prosperous, you'll all be successful. None of your marriages will fail. I make things equal. But you're serving a devil god who makes everything unequal. You're too high, my friend. You're far from the equator. You're far from the truth. You're far from Jesus Christ. You've left the equator. You left the comfort zone. You're too high. You're too haughty, overbearing, intoxicated, drunk, influenced by drugs. Far from the equator. Far from the one that makes things equal. That's why you have difficulty with food and addictions of whatever degree and whatever. You're far from the equator. You're too high. And that's why you're always looking for things. Coffee, nicotine, caffeine, alcohol, drugs, speed, cocaine. It doesn't matter. You need something to make you high. And if you're not into that kind of highness, then you need charm. You need flattering compliments. They make you feel good. They make you feel like you're better than you are. You're drunk on words. You're high. You're far from the equator. You need someone to tell you, hey, that's not really you. Here's where you are, my friend. Here is the sad truth about you. So here comes that equator guy again. Equator man. But you see, the sun at these high altitudes produces cold. And let me tell you what you get when you're haughty and you think you know everything and you're too high from the one who makes things equal. You get cold. Cold means frigid, Show me a marriage going down the tank, and I'll show you somebody in there that's frigid. Somebody's cold. Someone isn't able, is not even wanting to have the right relationship with their husband or their wife. And what do? They turn that warmness towards their children, towards their work, towards themselves, towards something else. But they are frigid to their partner. Why? You're too high. You're too far from the equator. He said, be in subjection to your own husband. He said to the husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. You're above that. You don't want to do that. One of you or both of you don't want to do that. So you become frigid. And all of a sudden, all that emotion and all that warmth that you felt toward each other from across the room doesn't work anymore. He could light your clothes and your hair on fire and you'd still be cold. And bring you a pound of marshmallows on top of you. What is this man? He just doesn't turn you on anymore, right? You're turned off. You're cold. You're frigid. Cold also means not cordial and not kind. Come in. How are you doing today, sweetheart? You have a nice day. That's not friendly and that's not very cordial. Oh, dear, did you have a nice day at work? Give me a big... Make them happy. Give them what they want. They don't want it anymore. They're depressed, saddening, gloomy people. Cold basically means lack of warmth. Now, these are people that you just can't quite seem to reach them. You might have a child that way. Just can't seem to get to them. No matter how much you spank, no matter how much you correct, they just don't hear you. They're up in the rarefied air. They really think they're something. Well, who put them on that pedestal? You bring them to me, I'll chop that sucker right out from under them. Put them down there where they belong. You're ruining that child. Now we have to talk about the other people in closing. The low, martyred, I'm suffering for the Lord, and everybody takes advantage of me, but I can take it, person. Low altitude means dense air. Now, these people are basically dense. That's what their problem is. There's too much and not enough room for this. They're dense. That's what happens. See, at low altitudes, the air is much denser. So when the light comes through, it creates radiation, which is nothing more than friction. And this friction is what heats it up. So the less air, the less friction, the less heat. The more air, the more friction, the more heat. So see, these people can only warm up through friction. They love to fight. They love to argue. They love to suffer. Now, these are the martyrs. Now, they go Jesus one better. Now, Jesus was nailed to the cross. They get a cross nailed to them. See, that way they can walk around everywhere they go. They got a cross on their back. See, it's done from the back with long screws. Or a bolt with a nut in front of it. See, they want to show off their cross, but they don't want to just stay on the hill. It's lonely up there. They want to be able to walk all over and say, see what I got on my... I'm not nailed to the cross. The cross is nailed to me. And try to take away the cross from a martyr. They'll fight you tooth and nail. How dare you take my cross away? Excuse me. See, low altitude means denser. Now, let me tell you what low means. Depressed. Shallow, of little degree, of little value, of less than normal power, below others in order, position, or rating. In other words, you've been indoctrinated with an inferiority complex. You had parents that said, you stupid. Can't you ever do anything right? Nothing you ever do is right. You're driving me crazy. I don't like you. You're always wrong. Always they indoctrinate. You can't do anything right. And then you married a husband says, you stupid, you dummy. Same thing. And now you have, what you did is you reinforced that inferiority complex that you were indoctrinated with as a child. That's why you have a low altitude. That's why the truth always makes you upset. You tell an individual that the slightest truth, and right away they start pooching up and puckering, and the waterworks starts. I get tears, snots, spit, and sweat. Everything is running all over the place. What's the problem here? This person has an inferiority complex. They have a low altitude. Basically, the problem is they're too far from the equator, too. I'm telling you, you belong in the middle. The problem is you're too low. Somebody sold you a bill of goods. And notice how Satan will give you either extreme. Either you are the most wonderful thing that ever happened, which is a lie, takes you away from the one who makes things equal, or you are the worst thing that ever graced the face of this earth, and that's a lie too. The fact of the matter is you're right in the middle, or you should be. Now, low also means depressed in spirits, melancholy, but it doesn't stop there. I wish I could tell you that the low, depressed person just walks around looking pious and pitiful. Let me tell you where it's going to take you. The rest of the definition means vulgar and coarse. These are the people that ultimately end up with some vulgarity in their life. Because they have a need to love and a need to be loved and no legitimate way to satisfy that need. So they turn it into a vulgar thing. You cannot be depressed and not have it come back to bite you. If you don't live in the middle, you're going to have some problems. You're going to become vulgar, coarse, depressed, debased, and undignified. Mean and despicable. Did you know that low means mean and despicable? Contemptible, poor, not advanced in development, and we could lock it all up in one word, the last part of the definition, inferior. See, you've been sold a bill of goods, and now you're trying to protect yourself with the very thing you don't want, and that is that inferiority complex. So you try to make the most of it by beating the other person to the punch. This is so sad when people say, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say it's all my fault, and I never do anything right. I've got a person with an inferiority complex on my hands right away. The first thing I say, yes, it's wrong. That spirit, that attitude that you have, it is wrong and it can do nothing right. But you're a child of God and God has better than that for you. You could be here in the middle doing everything just as God ordained if you'd get out of that low, dense atmosphere that you're in. And let me tell you what else low means. You can always tell the low person. The one who lives at low altitude. See, low has two definitions. I've given you number one. Here comes number two. You know what low means? As a cow. Lowing means to make the noise that a cow makes. And you watch these people. How are you doing today? How's things going? If I was into dairy products, I'd make a partnership with you. We'd both be millionaires. But see, you can listen to the person who has a low spirit because that's the way they talk. That's a lowing sound. It means to make the sound characteristic of a cow or moo. That's what the dictionary says. Now, this individual that's in a low, depressed state of mind, listen to your children. See what you're indoctrinating. Listen to you. And if you have that whiny, lowing kind of sound where you precede all of your comments or you end them that way, you're low. And so the truth only makes you hot. See, at low atmosphere, at low density, at low altitude, you get hot. You're too far from the equator. So what happens to an individual like this? The truth produces heat. Heat means hot weather and hot climate. Everybody knows that. Do you know what else it means? Heat means strong feelings or emotions. It means anger, intensity, stress, anxiety, great pressure, coercion, intimidation. You are a candidate for a heart attack or a stroke and don't even know it. You see, it saddens me when people, Christian people, die of those things and they think that it's something else. And I'll tell you what it is. You're low. You're living to the truth in effect. Has made your life shorter. You have excitement, anger, intensity, stress. Guys, you can't go to work and have this stress and cussing and throwing things around and feeling bad with your wife, with your job. You're begging for a heart attack. You're going to have one. And let me tell you the last part, hot. Hot means speed, excitement, impetuous, violent, raging, very controversial, and can only be heated by friction. It takes friction with these people. You can't get along with a person like this. Everything they do, they have to make a controversy out of it because they love friction. You see the sadness of these? And yet it's the same sun. It's the same God. It's the same truth. It's the same everything. But isn't it funny that God said in the book of Genesis, Moses was made pliable and Pharaoh was hardened by the same God. And he said, let my people go. He said it to Moses and Moses went and gave the message. When Moses said it to Pharaoh, it hardened his heart. It was the same God, same truth, same everything. But it affected two people in exactly two different ways. Yet it was the same God. This is the same message. I'm not picking on anybody, and I don't choose anybody. This is just the truth. And you can tell whether you're high, low, or in the middle. Now, if you're in the middle, if you're at the equator, the one who makes things equal, that's called the comfort zone. And comfort means the place where your stress is eased, your sorrow, your misery, or your grief are removed. Comfort means to have hope, encouragement, and aid. In other words, if you're not emotional, you don't get high, you don't get low. Just stay in the middle. Then the truth is going to bring you hope, encouragement, and aid. Everything you need comes to the truth. But if you have one of these other reactions, you need to move because I'm not going to. Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. I'm not moving, friends. And if the truth doesn't affect you right, then you need to move. You need to come down from that lofty perch or get up out of the pits, one of the two. And you spend 5 minutes with me and I'll tell you which one you're in. But until then, your life's going nowhere. You remember this message. You remember what I told you. And the next time you cycle and you go in the tank again, you go down the toilet. Remember, this preacher told you why. Or the next time you have a desire to go out and just say, the hell with it. I'm getting high. I'm going out. I'm getting drunk. I'm going to do this. You're in the high air, high altitude. That's not going to help you because after the high, there's always the hangover. There's always the depression. There's always the low. This is the individual, the smartest one of all, who chooses to live in both. Now, I don't want to just be high. I want to do something that makes me high and depressed the next day. And then the next day when you're depressed, you need an upper. And then when you get an upper, you need a downer. Now, that's the saddest condition. That's the ultimate condition. See, you start out with one or the other and you end up needing both. When you first get addicted to drugs, I better shut this thing up or I'll be wrong. I'd love to do this. When you first get addicted to drugs, all you need is the high. That's enough. But after a while, you get so addicted and you get so high, you can't sleep. You can't close your eyes. You're just a bundle of nerves. So now you need a depressant. You need a downer. Or you can't come. So now you need something to medically induce a depressed state to get you out of that high. Then you get up the next morning and you can't open your eyes. Now you need an upper to get you from the downer. And then that night you'll need a downer to get you down from the upper. Now you have succeeded in doing both, but that's how it began. You began just with the high. Satan only told you this feels good. He didn't tell you it's not going to let you sleep. It's going to get you to the point where you'll never be able to do anything else. And you're going to need then to seek and pay someone to make you depressed and sad so you can get a night's sleep. My God in heaven, can't you see what you're doing? And all of this came because you simply do not want the truth. Why? Because you're wrong? No, you're just in the wrong place. See, as long as Satan can keep you high or low, this truth is not going to affect you right. If you will just move, don't change what you're doing. Do what you're doing. I don't care. Just move to the middle. Quit being emotional. Quit being up or down. And this truth is going to heal your life. And you will hear it and you will appreciate it and there'll be a change. But you got to move. Because Jesus is not going to. Never leave you nor forsake you, but he never changes. The same yesterday, today, and forever. You don't have to quit what you're doing. Just move. Just come and do it in the middle. That won't last very long. And why? Because you won't want to. But the choice is yours. If you didn't get it tonight, come back. We'll give you the same one again. Brother Bob, would you close the services? And